Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 5, for Autumn Semester 2017. Lecture 6, delivered on September 7, 2017. The title of this lecture is Financial Ratios.
Tonight, ratio analysis. Combined with the last lecture, you will have your first in-class quiz. Now, the in-class part of it is where I tell you what company I'm talking about. And then you will go into ReggieNet, which has a pretty decent facility for taking quick quizzes. You have two chances at the quiz, and it will be based upon what you learned in the last lecture and what you learned tonight. But I will turn off the podcast, of course, before I tell you the name of the company that I want you to investigate. Sure enough, in the day class already, I've had two students. What's the company? Ah, you weren't here. Well, did I have to be? Oh. Okay. Anyway, a couple of things to start off. Analysis, financial analysis, involves sometimes quite frequently, perhaps too frequently, use of financial statements that are reported by public companies. It also involves a lot more than that. It involves interpretation of the information that you are being given. And those windows are definitely going to, that sunshine is going to definitely kill those. Let me, while I'm talking here for a minute. Now, public companies have legal names. However, they also have a, for lack of a better term, a handle that we use. That's their trading symbol. So sometimes I will refer to a company by its trading symbol rather than by its name. Kill these windows. So, for example, well, let me show you a couple of examples of companies. Find their trade names, find their trading symbols, and that will be probably the fastest way to get financial information. Start out with a quick thing, though, before I go any further. So, tell me this. Madam, where do I go to get the financial information for a public company? It's okay, it's the Edgar filing system. Now you can type Google and Google Edgar SEC and you'll be there, okay? So, but it is the Edgar filing system at sec.gov. This is an authoritative place to find information on companies. Now, really quickly here, and the best way to get to the information on the Edgar system is by using the trading symbol. I'm going to show you a couple. I'm going to go to Yahoo Finance here just for a moment. Finance.yahoo.com. Now, these, what I'm showing you here, we commonly call the screens, the screen for a company. Now, there are fancier places you can go for this. This is kind of like going to Walmart, but if all you're going to get is some quick stuff, Walmart doesn't hurt. So let's start with one like NFLX. That is Netflix. Okay? four letters. See, the trading symbol has four letters. That tells you that it is on the NASDAQ. That's where it trades. NASDAQ has the largest number of companies of any trading platform. And a lot of them we think of as small cap companies. But the NASDAQ has some 800-pound gorillas. Netflix would be one of those. Another one that you might find here is AAPL. Apple. See the four letters? That means it's a NASDAQ company. Not NYSE, not AMEX, not Nikkei, not any of those. Now let's go. Let's try one like... here's another one, MSFT, a monster company, and it's four letters, so it would be trading on the NASDAQ. Now let's look at one like this, KR, that's Kroger. Two letters would be the New York Stock Exchange. Another one, Kellogg, that also is on the NYSE. So one or two would probably be the NYSE. Four would be the NASDAQ. Three, probably AMEX. But you can always see, you just look at the screen and it'll tell you which exchange it's trading on. So don't think that you have to guess it just from the trading symbol. You can check and see how it says NYSE right there. So this is all good. Now, let's go back here. And I'm going to pull up Kroger just for an example. And then, knowing that it's KR, I'm going to go to SEC.gov. This information... Knowing how to do this isn't just important for this quiz, and it's not even important just for this class. You're going to have, at least in your college time, many opportunities to gather information and use that information in term papers, reports, and all of that, or for discussions in class, or even when you're going to do your job interviews. So it's worth it for you to know how to do this. On the filings, I will go to company filing search. And I'm showing you this again just so you know how to do it. It becomes ingrained in you. Fast search. In other words, if I know the trading symbol, I will hit my target right on the button. Now, I'm going to look down here and try to find the 10K. I usually just screen down. Here we go. Sometimes if they've got tons and tons of reports to the SEC, it'd be better to just type in 10-K to find the filing that you want. But the 10-K is their last annual disclosure on Form 10-K. And then we can bring down the Excel document and notice, of course, that there's going to be a lot of worksheets that you're not really interested in. Now, if you're just looking for quick, dirty information, I can just go in here and see the consolidated balance sheet and the consolidated statement of operations. In this case, it's interesting here that Kroger, unlike some companies, you'll see that Kroger shows its quarterly results, and then at the very right, it'll show its annual results. We'll look at annual results here. But, I'm going to expand this because that's kind of small print. Okay, no big thing there. We're going to use that in a little bit here to do some ratio analysis. But before I use the ratio analysis, I want to look at Kroger. Okay, quick and dirty. The previous close, in other words, yesterday's close, was at 22.56. The opening this morning was 22.53. Maybe a little bit of sell pressure overnight that made it close a little bit lower. Bid and ask right there. Now the day's range was pretty well, kind of modest. We see that Kroger was up almost a full percent for the day. Good news. We really don't care about how many dollars and cents it was up. That's not going to tell us as much as what the percentage change was. Okay, now it's your turn. Okay, as far as the 52-week range, let's try it. Is this company near its 52-week high or low? Look at its price at the close, the settle today. The settle was $22.77. Now, relative to that, look at the 52-week range. Tell me, is it near its 52-week low or 52-week high? It's near the low. It's not, it hasn't bottomed, but that's going to be kind of important for us to know. Let's look at the 1 year here for it. Right there is its 52-week low. What I see is a market that is testing the bottom, but it hasn't gotten to it. So what we see here are the investors barking at it, they deciding whether they want to break that neckline at the bottom. They haven't done it. They're testing it, they're trying to, but they haven't done it. The rule of thumb, and there are lots of rules, not just mine, this is an old rule. Three tests of the bottom, if it doesn't break the neckline, then that tells us that the stock is not going to break the neckline, at least in the near future. So it gives more of a sense of a buy. It's a bargain because it's near the bottom, but the stock, but the investors have decided that they don't want to test that neckline anymore. They couldn't bring themselves to drive through it, or the sellers were outdone by the buyers. The bulls were kept at bay on the neckline by the bear. The bears were kept at bay on the bottom neckline by the bulls. So that would probably be a kind of a sign that this is not going to be a terrible investment. Might even be a buy because it's near its bottom. It can't get to the bottom, so it's probably going to recover. We don't know that yet. Volume for the day. Now, one thing I should always, and I've said this before, I'll say it again. The volume number you see here is OBV, on balance volume. This is the result of the transparent open limit order books of the brokers and dealers. This is what we see in the transparent open market. There is another market that is deepening, getting larger. It's called the dark pools. In the dark pools, the limit order books are not transparent. They're not open. We don't know what goes on in there until somehow it bubbles to the surface and we've got ourselves a surprise. Well, no one saw that coming. Well, if we could have seen the dark pool action, maybe we would have known. So we don't know what that's doing here. So the on-balance volume is only part of the story of a security in the world of the 21st century as it is now. The dark pools are run by anything from kind of shady operations. Dark pools are run by the big dogs, too, that we know about for their preferred investors or for activity that they don't want to necessarily get the be subject to bid and ask. Market cap. Well, volume. Okay, notice that the volume was about 50% above the average for Kroger. So this was a heavy day. There was a lot of activity on this stock, and the activity, the bulls won the day at about a percent gain. Okay, bulls and bears. Bulls are optimists, they buy. Bears are pessimists, they short sell or sell. So this was kind of a heavy day for Kroger. Now, market cap. This is a company, the price per share times the number of shares outstanding. The market price per share times the number of shares outstanding. Kroger stands right now at $20.43 billion. Now I'm going to flip over here and look at the 10K. I'm going to look at the balance sheet. Down here is also a report of total equity. Right there, if you look, you will see that the book value of the equity, the accounting value of the equity, is $6.7 billion. Okay. The accounting statements say that the company is worth $6.7 billion. The market says that the company is worth $20.43 billion. That is not a minor difference. Madam, you are outside on a sunny day in Florida, but then you go inside for a while and you're not noticing what's going on outside. So you look at the weather service. This weather service is run by accountants. They say, continued sunny all day today, beautiful weather from here to eternity. Now you peek outside and you see everyone looking up at the sky, and here comes Hurricane Irma. You look down at your weather app, sunny. You look up there, and everyone else is like, oh God, it's saying, Which are you going to believe? The accounting meteorologist or your lying eyes? Yeah. The market where you would buy and sell. Well, you call a dealer. Well, I don't believe those market cap. I want to value this company according to what the accountants say because I took accounting in college. Okay, they're going to laugh their butts off at you. No, you see, you live by the market's rules. You live by what Hurricane Irma does. It picks you up and twirls you around and tosses you up in North Carolina. Okay? That is what we care about, is the market. The book value is a number on a financial statement that is driven by strict rules. It is simply how much they sold the stock for, the total value of stock they sold, plus any retained earnings surviving dividends. That's a book. There's no checking account that says that. You're not going to buy Kroger for $6.7 billion. You're going to buy ownership position in Kroger for 20. No one's going to give it to you for $6.7 billion. I don't want, again, I am not criticizing accounting. It has to be there. There are things that we have to put up with that they do. We understand their rules, and we understand how valuable they are as citizens. I don't like to criticize accountants, because, well, for one thing, because they kick me in the shins. If it's midget accountants, they kick me in the ankles. I got to stop saying that. I had someone file a complaint because I criticized midgets. No, really. I can't say anything about anyone anymore. Okay. Next thing is beta. Let me pull up another one. Let's try AAPL. Seriously? Do I need a hand crank to get this to do? Okay, good. Look at the beta of Apple, 1.43. Now, look at the beta of Kroger, 0.30. The fulcrum is 1.00. Beta measures the non-diversifiable risk of a security relative to the market portfolio. Beta measures the non-diversifiable risk of a security relative to the market portfolio. So in other words, a beta of 1 would have the same non-diversifiable risk as the market. A beta above 1 would be a security or a portfolio that has more non-diversifiable risk than the market. A beta below 1 has a non-diversifiable risk that is less than the market, the risk of the market. So if you were to look at these two stocks, for example, Kroger, is this a risky stock or a non-risky stock?
Non-risky.
Yeah, it is a what we would call a defensive stock. You would put this in a portfolio that was low risk. Whereas Apple, on the other hand, actually 0.3 is quite low. 1.43 of Apple is actually fairly high. We form our portfolios based upon, and I'm repeating myself here a little bit, but I want to emphasize these concepts, based upon the risk preference of the clientele, of the securities holder. The old idea was that when you're young, you will tend to have a risky portfolio because you can afford to lose, because you can recover. You'll have time in your life. But there will come a time, before you know it, when you will have to pull back and become less so. For example, sir, in a few years you're going to hear your girlfriend say those wonderful, loving, sweet words, "I'm going to have a baby." Yeah. Don't say, "Whose is it?" Okay, seriously. You don't want to die, not young. You're going to have to become more responsible. Now, you're still going to have to be an investor because you're going to have to put money in the bank for the kids' college education. I mean, you're going to have to put money in the bank for a home for them to live in. When they're teenagers, you're going to have to pay for their drug rehab. The whole nine yards. All of that. No, yours won't be like that. Your kids will be good. Mine, you know, God, I messed them up bad. Anyway, but you understand that you will have to pull back some. As you get older, you will probably pull back more, probably below your portfolio. Your portfolio will just be the weighted average of the betas of the stocks in it. So you're going to have to bring your whole portfolio's beta downward because by the time you're 50, you can't afford to get creamed. You won't have time to recover. And at 60, 70, you're in a really defensive position. The bad thing is that old relationship, the rock solid basis of all things, the greater the expected return, the greater the risk that you must take. Which means, in this case, that as you pull back to a more defensive position, you should expect a lower return. You roll high, you win high, but you can also lose big. You roll low, you win low, but you're not going to take any kind of major loss if you lose. Now, the next one is your first ratio that I'm going to bring up tonight. The P/E ratio is the price-earnings ratio, or price-to-earnings ratio. We usually say the P/E of the company. The price-earnings ratio is the current price of the stock per share divided by the last reported earnings per share of the company. That's your first ratio tonight. It is actually a measure of risk. It's telling us for each dollar that belongs to the shareholders at the bottom line, how many dollars is that going to make for the shareholders in the future, according to the market? Again, for each dollar of earnings the company has made that belong to the shareholders, how many dollars will that make for the shareholders in the future? In this case, for Apple, they're saying about $18.31. That's what it's kind of saying. It's simply, okay, a dollar belongs to you at the bottom line. It was a bad stock. No, but a dollar belongs to you. How many dollars are investors willing to pay to get a claim on one of those bucks? That's what it's saying. So the more dollars they're willing to pay, the more risk they're taking are that that dollar is going to do what they think it's going to do. Now, back in my time, 10 to 15 would have been a pretty high PE. Now, 18 is sort of like a snort. Hell, during the big times in the 90s, you had PE ratios 200, 500. Nikkei had a stock that had a PE ratio of 20,000. I mean, that's just insane. But so there's a little bit of a discoordination here. You see, that beta is telling me that this is a pretty risky stock, but that PE ratio is telling me, well, it's kind of risky, but it's not that risky. Okay, whatever. Dividend yield. Okay, the dividend yield. This is the next one. Dividend yield is simply the dividend per share the current dividend per share divided by the price per share. This is one of your ways that you make money on a stock. Essentially, you know you're going to get, well, at least you hope, you're pretty sure you'll get this dividend. So when you buy that stock for $161.26, you will get that dollar. You may get nothing on the rise in the stock price, but you will get that dollar, that money. So this is like your percent earnings on your savings account called Apple stock. You can think of it that way. The other way that you make money on a stock is through the capital gain. The capital gain yield. You take these two together and you get your total expected gain or return. Now, the capital gain yield is just the, and this would be for 1 year, sell price minus buy price over the buy price. This is just that same formula, the percent change formula I showed you before. N minus begin over begin. And if you did it for exactly 1 year, you would get an annual return. So in this case, they're telling us the yield on Apple is 1.56%. They did that calculation for us. For the other one, someone is projecting, someone who's a guru, or it might be someone who's stupid. It might even be one of my cats. I don't know. My cats leave me at night sometimes, and I think they're doing this. But what you would do is you'd say, all right, I buy the stock today, I sell it in 1 year. So the estimate is $171.41 sell minus the price right now, $161.26, divided by the $161.26. That would be my capital gain yield on a 1 year hold. Now, if I crank that out real quick here, I should have brought up the calculator before. Calculator. That's scientific. I'm going to take, expand that, and I'm going to do 171, open parenthesis, 171, what was that, 40.41, less 161.26, thank you, 161.26, close the parentheses, divided by the 161. That, by the way, the $10.15 is your dollar gain on a 1 year hold. But I'm going to divide that by the 161.26, and 6.29%. So your total return on a 1 year hold is expected. This is expected. We don't even know if Apple's going to pay that dividend. We don't know really what the stock price is going to be in a year, so we are giving projections. So this is not what you will make, it is what you expect to make. And in this case, what does that come out to be? 7.85% would be the expected one-year return on Apple stock. Here's the deal. That actually doesn't impress me at all. A beta of 1.43, and all you're going to take on that is 7.85%, really? That's not something that gets me excited at all. Even in this low interest rate environment, you're taking half again as much risk as the market, and you're going to get only about less than 8% expected return. That's a little concern to me. That tells me I'm not going to be too excited about Apple until they actually make an iPhone that's not just a variation on what they've already done. Forgive me for you iPhone fans out there. We do have rehab for you if you want it. Okay, anyway, look at the size of this monster company, though. $833 billion. That is just a little, that's not too far from $1 trillion equity value. That's not even the enterprise value. The enterprise value adds in the debt. This is just the value of ownership. Total value of ownership is just south of $1 trillion on one company. A long time ago, we tried to make laws that something like this could not happen. Even the god of conservative economics, Adam Smith, had a cow at the prospect of companies this large. But here we are. This is why a lot of us, when we talk about economics, economies, and finance, we still talk about nations to some extent, but we really know that that's kind of old fact, that's kind of obsolete. Really, the action now, and we can't stop it, it'll be this way forever, is spheres of economic power. When you've got something the size of $1 trillion, the owners have value of $1 trillion, almost $1 trillion, that's an economic force on the global stage. That's Amazon. It's planning not just to be an economic force on the global stage, but also on the stage of interplanetary space. So we're talking about things that are beyond any imagination, which puts us at the level, compared to them, of amoeba versus T-Rexes. So keep that in mind. Welcome to the world of the 21st century. It does kind of suck. Okay, now, one last thing. We're going to take this out and do a 1 year. Apple where is Apple? Is it near the top or bottom of its 52-week range? Talk to me. It's near the top. Does it? It looks like it tested a neckline back a few months ago, broke it, just wiped it off the face of the earth. Now the new neckline, it's prowling around it, it's sniffing at it, but it hasn't broken the new neckline. Do you see that? That new neckline is sitting there, that little peak there at the end, it's off the peak. It wants to move toward it, but it definitely backed off today from testing that new peak. So there's something that we might want to keep an eye on. Is it going to break that neckline? If it is, that's a buy. But my sense is that, you know, if you're going to get a return of only 7.85% on it, there might be some things that would be better worth your time to have a look at. That's a nice dividend, though. I mean, that dividend yield doesn't suck. You spend $161.26 over the course of the year. Next year, you expect to get a 1.5% return. That's better than a checking account, even better than savings accounts right now. So it's not the worst thing in the world. Apple is most definitely not a sell. But it's for, in my book, just teaching the judgment part of it, the human part. This would be a hold. This isn't a sell. It's not a buy. This would be a hold stock. And eventually I'll check you to see if you can give a good call and a good rationale for your good call. But I'm not going to do that for a while yet. That wouldn't be fair. Let's go back to Kroger. Now, as you can see, Kroger is a very defensive stock. That PE is actually indicating a little more risk with Kroger than the beta is. But you always, for purposes of corporate analysis and securities analysis, we, at the end of the day, we take the beta. The PE ratio is something we look at nervously sometimes, but the beta is what we use for our calculations that make real things happen in the project decision making. Okay, now, and again, notice that the dividend yield, actually Kroger's dividend yield is better than Apple's. Do you see that? You spend $22.77, you put that into a bank account called Kroger, and you will expect to get at least 2.22%. Now, if I were to also look at quickly the gain on Kroger, real quick, $26.09, $22.77. Is that what that is? $26.09 minus $22.77. So, thank you, 77. All over 22.77. The capital gain yield on this guy right now, if that projection is to be believed, would be 26.09 minus 22.77, close the parentheses, divided by 22.77. Oh, hey, that's not bad at all. 14.58%. That's your capital gain. 5.8. Your dividend yield was 2.22. Was that what that was? Yeah. So that would be your dividend yield component of your investment yield. So that comes out to be 16.80%. Look at that. A low beta stock with a darn decent return. And it costs only $22.77 a share. Well, you'll pay some commission probably and all that. But that's not bad at all. Compared to Apple, if you're saying, which would you buy, Kroger or Apple? I'd say, let's go shopping at Kroger. So there you are. There's how we do the analysis. And this isn't just for you to take quizzes and tests. This is for you to do for your own lives and for your own investment thinking. And if you get into the world of investments as a broker or a trader, or if you get into financial planning, wealth management, this is what you do. This is the kind of stuff that you do. And so you want to do it right because you don't want to hurt people at all. And that comes to the appropriateness of investments. You don't put people or pension plans or whatever into inappropriately risky investments or inappropriately low-risk investments either. So there you are on that. Now notice, of course, Kroger, it's going to test its neckline. I honestly don't think Kroger is going to break its neckline. And here's the thing. Kroger has just announced recently. Well, it announced it a while back, but it's beginning to take action. It's going to get rid of all of those old Krogers and go to the big box because it needs to start to go up head-to-head against the ones that are huge, the stores that are huge. And I'm actually not even talking about Walmart. I'm talking about, does anyone know what a a big box competitor would be that Kroger needs to come up against face to face? Anyone got one in mind? There's one here in town. Got anything? Oh no, Jewel. No, no. That's the midget.
Oh boy, oh boy. We can survive. No, you can't. Yes, we can.
Huh? Nope. Small. They're in trouble. Hy-Vee. Sam's Club, no, because that's a membership. They want to come up against Hy-Vee. Hy-Vee, Giant Eagle, Winn-Dixie. Well, maybe Winn-Dixie a little bit. But that's what they're aiming to go up head-to-head. So they are trying to avoid the terrible mistake that JCPenney did, leaving the stores the same. You walk into a JCPenney, and it looks like the same store that your great-grandmother walked into. Literally, when I was a kid, I can still know where everything is at JCPenney because I went there when I was a kid. They don't want to go that way. They want to do what Target did. Target upgraded their stores. You remember when Targets didn't look like they do now? Now they've upscaled them. They're still aiming at you, but they're also now in the business of demographic tracking. In other words, they want to keep you coming to their store as you get older while still keeping the stores young and hip for the college crowd. That cost Target a lot of money, and it hurt their financials, and they were punished by the stock market for that. But still, they're in business. Have you noticed that Kroger's now have those grocery sections in them and all that kind of stuff? They are moving forward. That's what Kroger's trying to do. The market's going to spank them for doing this. But in my judgment, they will go the same way that Target did. They're doing what they have to. It's going to hurt their earnings. But at the same time, you do what you have to do for the long haul. The market will act on short term much more than it will on long term. If you're playing this for the long term, which is what you should always do with stocks and investments, you play for the long haul. If you want to do the long bomb and think you're going to make $1 billion in a year, well, dream on. You'll be like all the people who think they're going to win the lottery because they saw someone on TV. I won the lottery. Yeah, and 100 million people didn't win the lottery, sucker. Okay, so this gives you a little background. What I'm doing here, by the way, is, okay, technical analysis, you just look at the numbers. We call the people who do pure technical analysis elves. I've been an elf before because no one wanted to hear my opinion until I got good. Elves are just pure technical. Then there are the fundamentalists, the fundamental analysts like me. They take the numbers, but then they ask the next questions. What do these mean? What's going on that isn't exactly in the numbers, but is driving the numbers? What is it that the numbers can't even tell us yet about the company? That's fundamental analysis. That's what I teach in my finance classes. That's what I teach you here, is look at the numbers, the technical, the financial statements, the ratios that I'm showing you, but then move on and ask, what do those numbers mean? That's where if we have any hope of surviving as professionals in the world of artificial intelligence, it's because we can do this. And no matter how powerful the machines are, they are just going to be machines at the end of the day. Did you see the movie Predator? You did. Or Terminator. Did you see Terminator? Yeah. You saw the original one with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yes.
He was a machine. All he could pretend he was a human. He said, hasta la vista, baby. But he didn't know what that meant. He looked like a machine being creepy. Seriously. If you have something with a metal face, say, hasta la vista, baby. You're not going to trust that. That's where we gain the trust of humans. Because we don't need to worry about humans crossing the uncanny valley. There is no valley for us. We're humans just like the people who we are going to talk to and advise. Okay, next. Let's rock on these financials. View the financial statements. Oh, a mother's work is never done. Here's the thing, though, is just like before, Yeah, I'm going to have to view the Excel document. Open it. I hate, because all of these, there's the balance sheet pretty quickly. Well, that's wonderful. Really quick, just looking very quickly at this balance sheet again, a couple of things come to mind that we might care about. For example, we've looked at the book equity. Book is not the market cap, but we might want to look at it. And I, by the way, have put up a formula sheet of ratios in the resources tab of ReggieNet. It's just for you to use if you're taking a quiz or something or a test, and it's also something you might want to laminate it and put it on your refrigerator. When mom comes over, she's going to be so impressed by something like that. Looking at the assets, their asset base has grown, and we would want to do a percent change. But it looks to me like it's about a 10% increase in total assets. That's healthy. What's really interesting to me is notice how Kroger is building its cash war chest. They are building that so that they can deploy and build these new stores fast. They've got to get rid of those old Krogers. Do you ever go up to the Kroger up there near campus? There's a Kroger up there. It's old. It's dingy. Really weird, creepy people go in there, like the students from Illinois Wesleyan.
I didn't say that. No.
Yeah, they're building their war chest. They're going to plow in and build, make new stores, big stores, bright, shiny, open stores to invite more people to come in and hope that they don't lose their traditional customers. We figure that there are a lot of things that we do in marketing that will help us keep those old customers, bring in new customers, and also even make our average customer spend more in our store. Make a store bigger, and people will buy more. It's as simple, did you know that if you double the size of the shopping cart, the average revenue of your store goes up by about 19%? Isn't that weird? We do all of those modern things, bright and shiny, inviting. Anything you would want is there to eat. Everything from gluten-free to vegan to meat eaters' delight. Okay. A few things, let me run through here. I'm going to find my income statement. There it is. And I'm going to expand this so you can see it a little better, I hope. Sure enough, notice how so many companies do not put in that gross income line. In other words, I want to know what retail minus wholesale is. Okay, insert right there. And then we just take that number, the revenue, minus this number, the wholesale cost of goods sold. And then we're going to run that across the columns so that we can get over here. Okay, let me try that again. There we go. Now notice revenues are growing pretty strongly in this last. We want to do percent changes. We really do, to see how much better. But the first ratio, this is a profitability ratio. It is the gross income divided by the revenue. And now let me explain that. Equals the gross income divided by the revenue. And I'm going to do that for 2017. Well, I'm going to have to turn that into a percent here. Format the cell. Okay, percent. And I always do two decimal places for my own purposes. Okay. 22 and a half cents of every dollar brought in survived the wholesale payments. That's not, is that good or bad? Well, you'd have to look at the industry. You'd have to look at this company's performance previously. In this case, it looks to me like they have brought their gross margin up somewhat. It looks like 24,334 divided by 109,830 is going to be a smaller number than the current fiscal year. Now, the next one that we're going to care about here is we're going to look at the operating profit. This can be called operating income. Really? Or you'll hear a lot of finance people, including me, call it EBIT, E-B-I-T, E-B-I-T, earnings before interest and taxes. Now, the operating profit is how much money has survived all of the normal business costs, wholesale costs and your wages and salaries, your light bills, your postage, your meals and entertainment, your current values of your capitalized expenses. That one, the operating margin, you would take the operating income, okay, equals operating income divided by the sales. How many dollars that went into the cash drawer survived as a percentage? Ow, no. Did I do the wrong line there? Oh, I hope I did. Oh, yeah, I did. Boy, that would have been, that's a sell. Well, don't give me that crap. I'll do it again. Fine. Okay, that equals that divided by that. Operating income, EBIT, divided by your revenues. Okay. This time, all just a tiny smidgen shy of 3%, 3 cents of every dollar brought into the cash drawer survived all of the normal business expenses. That's a little scary, but again, that might be normal. You have to look at what the industry ratios are. You look at how that margin has deteriorated or improved from period to period. But still, there you go. Now, finally, again, this one's called operating margin. And then finally, we get to the one at the bottom. We get to the net income line. In other words, net earnings attributable to Kroger. That guy right there. And we take equals that number right there. I'm doing the latest reporting year, fiscal. Woof. $0.0171 of every dollar that they took into the drawer survived to belong to the shareholders. That is how much belongs to the shareholders per dollar that came in. Now, we usually turn that into a percentage, as we do with all the margins. We express them as percentages. Gross of net margin, 1.71%. Is that good? Is that bad? Well, again, the scale of a company, oftentimes huge companies actually have low net margins. That's not a problem because the scale of their revenues is so enormous that there's still, in absolute dollars available to the shareholder, there's still a lot of money. But, you know, you just have to look at Kroger compared to other companies. But still, it looks to me like Kroger is getting itself positioned to grow. It's spending a lot of money, no question about that. If I were to look at the net margin for the year previously, a little bit of erosion from the year previously. They're spending money, and this is one of those things. Let's just see how it goes. They're not doing horribly. They lost a little bit of ground from fiscal 16 to fiscal 17. But it's still, you got to be patient with a company that is moving from one century to another. Literally, Kroger, Target, companies like those, that's not going to be an easy move from one century to another. And Kroger, I would give Kroger slack for this reason, that it is showing that it's willing to move forward. Unlike Sears, unlike Penny's, even to a certain extent, like The Gap. The Gap has finally conceded that it's going to close 200 of its Gap and Banana Republic stores and focus on the stores that are more apace with modern times. What's Gap's biggest franchise? What's Gap's biggest money winner that it's going to keep? Anyone know? Old Gravy, Old Navy. Yeah, Old Navy is its strong seller. It's kept pace. It doesn't try to be innovative, but it does try to be trendy with the kids of the era. It appeals to young families. It appeals to kids. Another store chain that is doing that, it's always been doing that, is the Limited's brand, which started out as Limited 2, was it? And now it's changed its name to Justice, trying to keep pace with kids, modern kids. But anyway, moving out of that, those are the gross margins. Really quickly here, one that I had brought up last time was Times Interest Earned. Times Interest Earned is how many times over does EBIT, can EBIT, Times Interest Earned, Times Interest Earned, EBIT over interest expense. Again, as I had told you before, any number below one means the company is dog meat. In this case, if I were to look at interest expense, which is this line here, and operating, you would take operating income, operating profit, whatever you want to call it, divided by interest expense. And I'm going to look at the current year. Equals that number divided by that number. Kroger can pay its interest expense more than 6.5 times over. That's healthy. I mean, if it were to erode much, I might be a little concerned. Let me, out of curiosity, see how it's trending. Is there a train coming by? Did you hear that? Oh, God, that's the angel of death on his horse. And I forgot to take my meds today. Okay, anyway. Shut up. Okay. It's eroded slightly. That's the result. Let's look and see, did Kroger take on more debt to leverage its equity? That means we got to go to the balance sheets. Let's see what's going on. If we look at the total, debt, long-term debt, sure enough, look at that. See how Kroger is taking on debt to leverage, to magnify return on equity? Now we can look at ROE, return on equity. That would be the return on equity would be the total equity of the company. I'm sorry. It would be the net income of the company. Net income, oops, I mean this one right here. 1975 divided by the shareholders' equity, that value right there, total equity. Ooh, that's a nice healthy number. The return on equity, net income over stockholders' equity, is, like I said, that is a pretty healthy, and again, this one's a percentage. That times interest earned, by the way, isn't a percentage. It's a times, it's a multiple, it's a factor. 29.43%, that is nice, strong performance. It's eroded a little bit from the previous fiscal year, but that's still pretty good show. Now, there's return on assets, which is net income over total assets. So I would do equals, go back to the, well, I wanted to get net income. Net income divided by total assets. And if I look at that one, 5.41%. Not spectacular. However, let's see how it did year over year. It has eroded, looks like it's eroded a lot more than the return on equity. So what this simply means to us, and there are other ratios, you can look them up on my ratios formula, but these are kind of critical ratios. Return on assets is saying, all right, all of your assets are an investment. How much money did that investment make for you in the current year? In this case, the total of its assets as a single investment bought it about a 5.5% return in the current year. Return on equity says your shareholders' money, you people who own this company, how much did the money of yours we used make that belongs to you? And in that case, we see a very strong number of 29.43%. So this is a company, its assets are performing rather weakly, it looks like to me. But the owner's money is working like gangbusters for the owners. That's actually a fairly good sign. And one thing that I can guarantee you is if the company's asset base is growing, that's going to cause this to erode for a while until those assets begin to perform. Again, ROA is net income over total assets. If your total assets are going up, it'll probably take a while for those to start to perform down to net income. So I'm not going to get too excited about this number being kind of weak, because this is Kroger putting in an awful lot of fixed assets that in and of themselves won't make money for a long time, but overall, over the long haul, they will. Now, returning us to the world of stock screens. The first place, if you hear a trading symbol, two things you want to do. First, go into Yahoo Finance or something like that and get the screen up. The second thing you would probably want to do is then use the trading symbol to go to Edgar to get the financial statements. This will become sort of like your gut reaction as business people, is that there are resources that you can trust. And all of the other places on the internet, there's this big thing, a term called fake news. Sometimes it is fake news, but there's also something called suspicious news or suspect. We as professionals can't go to Wikipedia. We can't go to some place that says, we've got the financials, we'll tell you what to think. You go and trust yourself and the sources that have to tell the truth in order for them to stay in business. And that would be a place like SEC.gov. Yahoo, to a certain extent, don't look at their financials. Don't look at Kroger's financials on Yahoo, because they import the data from Edgar and there are glitches in it. Almost any site that's not the original can have problems with data transmission. So always keep that in mind. Know what's a pro site, know what's not, and go with the pros, because that's what you are. Now, before I say that's all I have for you tonight, I thank you. I'm going to write on the board some letters. Now, the in-class quiz opens up on ReggieNet at 8 o'clock. You have a few days. You get two tries at it. But if you want to be a hero to people who don't come in the class, you're going to tell them this trading symbol or whatever this thing is. If you want to be evil bastards, in other words, good business people, when they say, can you tell me, I couldn't be there. I was like stoned on Molly. No. You can say, sure, I'm a sucker. Walk on me. I'm trying to teach you how not to do that. Unless they got something really cool, you know. And don't blurt this out, for God's sake. No. Okay? That's all I have for you tonight. I thank you.